Good morning. Thankful for this opportunity to speak to you again. Do so, and we'll go to classes in just a few minutes. I was kind of surprised the last lesson I brought. I spoke about someone that was a notable character to me and I was familiar with that a lot of people weren't and hadn't heard of. I'm going to start out my lesson by talking about someone else that I think is common knowledge, but like the wife and I talk about, that's what you call a generation gap. So, Audie Leon Murphy was the son of a poor Texas sharecropper, but he rose to national fame as the most decorated U.S. combat soldier of World War II. Among his 33 awards and decorations was the Medal of Honor, the highest military award for bravery that can be given to any individual, for conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty. He also received every decoration of valor that his country had to offer, some of them more than once, including 5 decorations from France and Belgium. He was credited with in battle with capturing hundreds of soldiers himself, and became a legend within the 3rd Infantry Division. Beginning his service as an Army private, Audie quickly rose to the enlisted rank of Staff Sergeant, was given a battlefield commission as Second Lieutenant, was wounded 3 times, which he received Purple Hearts for, fought in 9 major campaigns across the European theater, and ultimately survived the war. He came home to the United States and starred in over 44 movies and the 1949 autobiography of his life called To Hell and Back was a bestseller, and held the record as Universal Pictures' highest grossing picture from 1955 until 1975, when a little movie called Jaws came out. Audie Murphy also went on to write poetry and was quite successful as a songwriter. There are many major recording artists in the 60s and 70s who sang songs that he wrote. While on a business trip in May of 1971, Memorial Day weekend, he was killed in a plane crash in Roanoke, Virginia, at the age of 46. He was what I would describe as an unlikely candidate to be a soldier. We'll look at that a little bit later on. And that's the tie-in that I want to use him as an example for, is there are also leaders in the Bible that God picked as unlikely leaders. In Judges chapter 6, we see one of these characters, a man by the name of Gideon. Gideon was alive during the time of the Judges. The children of Israel had been led out of Egypt. They had gone through the wilderness 40 years. And they're living in the land of Canaan. The conquest led by Joshua has been long since gone. And the people are led by judges. Joshua and the conquest failed to do one thing, and that was to utterly wipe out everyone that was in the land. And these people came back, and for generations will cause them havoc. During this situation in Judges chapter 6, we see that this is going on, and the Midianites are placing hard times upon the children of Israel. They've come in the masses, and they've destroyed their crops. So the children of Israel are suffering from famine due to the Midianites destroying them. So an angel comes to Gideon. He's got a little bit of grain, and he's thrashing it behind a wine press. He's hiding. He's trying to get enough food. And he's having to hide to do it, or else the Midianites will come take everything. And the angel comes to him and tells him that God wants him to lead. And Gideon isn't sure about that. He says that, he said, "Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh, and I'm the least of my father's house." He's basically saying, I'm not a good leader. I'm just a little peon. I'm just an average Joe. But he is told, "The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor. Go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent thee?" So we're told that the Midianites are without number, and their camels, just the beast that carries all their possessions and carries them, are without number. They can't even be counted. In the midst of this, Gideon is told to go and tear down their altar of Baal and the grove where they worshiped idols. And by fear of doing it in the daylight, he takes 10 men and he does it at night. And he builds an altar to the Lord, and he sacrifices a bull on this altar with the green wood he's just cut down. I'm not much of an outdoorsman as far as starting lots of fires, but I'm pretty sure it's hard to do with green wood. You want some that's been dead a while and has been cured out. But he does it. And chaos ensues the next day when all of these idol worshipers show up and their outdoor church has been torn down. Who did it? They said, "Well, Gideon did it." And they get ready. They are going to fight and destroy everyone. Messengers are sent throughout the land, and the children of Israel came to fight and help in great numbers. God told Gideon, "There's too many people. If they go and win, they won't believe they did it with my help. They'll think they did it by their own strength and their own numbers." It says that they would be vaunted up, that they would be puffed up and really proud. So God thins out the fighters. He said, "Tell them, whoever is afraid and scared, go on home." 22,000 people did that. 22,000 people that considered themselves scared went on home, leaving about 10,000 soldiers to fight the Midianites with. And God said, "That's too many people. Take them all down to the water and have them drink water." Everyone that knelt, they weren't told this before, but they watched, and everyone that knelt down and drank from the water on their knees, they told them, "Y'all can go on home." They kept the ones that cupped the water and brought it and drank it like that. It says that they lapped it. When those people went home, Gideon was left with 300 people. 300 people to fight so many people that they were without number. They couldn't be counted. In an ingenious plan, and Gideon trusted, and these 300 trusted and followed and did what God wanted them to do. They took a pitcher, a torch, and a ram's horn. They didn't have a machine gun. They had a pitcher and a torch and a ram's horn. And they went out at night. And Gideon split them up into three groups surrounding them. And when they were given the command, they broke the pit. They said, "The sword of Gideon and of the Lord." They blew the trumpets and they broke their pitchers. And I can only imagine that the sound of this breaking the pitchers sounded like similar to the sound of pulling the swords from their sheath to go into battle. And these Midianites are woken up in the night to these lights all around them and trumpets blowing in the dark. And they started fighting, but you know who they fought? Each other. They destroyed themselves. And they did this because Gideon and those 300 people obeyed what God told them to do. Can you imagine being one of those 300? Okay, 300 versus all of them. What's our weapons? Okay, get you a pitcher and get you a torch and take your trumpet. No sword, no spear, no bow and arrow. I wonder if I would have been brave enough to go and do that. But they did, and they won. The survivors scattered and were hunted down throughout the land. Yet in spite of victories like this under the leadership of the judges, the people still fall away. They want to be like everyone else. And what do? They ask for a king. Give us a king. We want to be like everyone else. They were told and warned what a king would do, that they would take their children and use them in their service, and they didn't care. They wanted a king. 1 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 2 talks about their leader that was picked. Of course, we know Saul was the first king of the Jews, king of the children of Israel. And description of him says that he was described as a goodly or handsome man. He was the son of Kish, one of the sons of Kish, who was a renowned, powerful man, it said. But he was picked as king, and he was head and shoulders above everyone else. When you looked across all the people, you saw Saul. That's the type of leader they thought they wanted. That's him. Oh, that Saul's the one. He's a great leader. He's going to scare everybody to death. And Saul led God's people in many battles and was successful until he didn't follow what God told him to do. When he was told to go and utterly destroy the Amalekites, he went and he fought and he won. But when he was coming back in, leading bringing a whole bunch of animals and flocks. Oh, and he had the king of them too. He brought him back as prisoner to show everybody how powerful he was. And he told the prophet that met him, "Boy, we utterly destroyed them." The prophet said, "Well, what's that I hear? What are those noises?" Those are the animals brought for sacrifice. He was told God wants obedience, not sacrifice. And he was told that the kingship would be taken away. Before that was done, he was sent out to fight another group of people with a famous warrior called Goliath, who came out and daily taunted them. And all of the best soldiers they had wouldn't go take on this man who was insulting God on a daily basis. But yet, another unlikely warrior, an unlikely character that we wouldn't think of picking to be our champion, went out with his slingshot and destroyed their most noted and famous warrior with a sling and a smooth rock. He was described as a ruddy individual, red. He was a shepherd. He'd been tending the flocks while the big brothers were off at war. His dad, Jesse, had sent him down to take provisions so they could fight. And this red, maybe red-haired, maybe sunburned shepherd became their leader ultimately, because he did what he knew and trusted in God. Ultimately, we know that this was David, and he was described as a man after God's own heart. He was not head and shoulders. When all the sons of Jesse were brought by, Jesse brought all the sons he thought might be the king. He said it wasn't them. None of these. Don't you have any? Well, we got one that's with the sheep. And that was the leader. He was the one who trusted God enough to be the leader. Well, time is fleeting, and I will wrap this up. But what God thinks and man thinks are not the same thing. And we need to think about that. time and again, when God told Moses, go lead my people out of Egypt, well, I'm not a good speaker. What God tells us to do and what God has given us to do, we need to use those talents. And these are some excellent examples of people who did that. I'll wrap it up, but before my closing statements, we need to think about Romans 8 and verse 31. We need to look in the mirror and think every day, if God be for us, who can be against us? On June 7th, 1971, Audie Murphy was buried with full military honors in the Arlington National Cemetery. His gravesite near the amphitheater is second most visited gravesite year-round. I've got a picture. One of the kids on a trip, 4-H trip to Washington, D.C., sent me a picture of Audie Murphy's gravesite, his headstone. The only person who receives more visitors every year at Arlington National Cemetery than Audie Murphy is John F. Kennedy. He's the second most honored person buried there. In spite of the fact he was rejected for service by the Marines and the Navy before he was allowed to enter the Army, When trying to enlist in the Marines and the Navy, they said, you don't have what it takes. You're too little. Audie Murphy was 5'5" tall. So when we're faced with opportunities to serve God and we think we may not have what it takes, we need to think about Gideon. We need to think about Moses. And we need to think about David. And those examples aren't so far from us in this society that we can't see them. Audie Murphy, our most decorated World War II soldier, took 3 tries before anyone even let him be a soldier. We need to have that kind of tenacity for God that Audie Murphy did for the United States. We'll close with this verse, Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 8. I hear the Lord, the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Then said I, here I am, send me.